group.
To Montreal, Quebec, where a senior center provides support for youth caregivers. There are more than 1 million of them across the country.
They don't consider themselves to be caregivers, so there's no discussion, there's no communication, so there's no support.
The Dimensions Retreat Center helps Canadian veterans cope with PTSD.
Well, alcohol and pills and everything took over my life. Rehab got me on the way to everything. It got me off the booze, off the pills and everything. But a lot of the work happens after, putting the time in for yourself.
History is made in BC. The Comox First Nation appoints its first Justice of the Peace. Dr. Marion Buller leads this journey of self-governance.
Dr. Buller is a First Nation member of the Mistawasis Cree First Nation in Saskatchewan and has achieved much in her career over 22 years as a provincial judge. There's no doubt that they've made a perfect choice for their Justice of the Peace.
And we'll take to the ice and relive special moments between fans and curlers in the mixed doubles curling trials in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Austin.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome to this new year. Happy to have you with us to kick off 2025. My name is Boris Chassai and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Many of us have thought about our New Year's resolutions during the holidays. Yes, we had ours. Some of you might want to lose weight, read more, maybe travel, or do you wish to make a positive impact on your community and by volunteering maybe? Well, the Waterloo region has for the past few years been facing a decrease and volunteers and is looking for more. Could it be you? Kimberly Seed made the move. She's a volunteer driver for Family and Children's Services in Kitchener and spends a couple of hours every month doing so. Cora Cool, based in Kitchener, Waterloo, Ontario, spoke to several volunteers about why they give their time to others.
Waterloo Region is facing a decrease in volunteers since the pandemic, and organizations across the region are always looking for new volunteers. Volunteers like Kimberly Seed, who is a volunteer driver for Family and Children's Services in Kitchener, says the benefit of volunteering is the impact it has on the people directly.
It just feels good to be able to give back to your community. And even if you're doing one thing a week for an hour, or if it's once a month that you're volunteering your time, just being able to give back to whatever organization you're doing the volunteering with, that's part of being part of community, right? You live wherever you live, you pay your taxes, and you should also maybe give back a little bit if you can.
Seed has been volunteering for over a decade and leads a busy life outside volunteering. Seed says the impact is what keeps her going.
There's been a lot of different roles, and I think the different experiences and different kids that I've been able to interact with and just kind of seeing the impact it has just really keeps me going. Every time I'm like, oh, I'm just going to cut back a little bit, I'm like, well, I can't cut back on this because it's just too important.
Like Seed, Benita Lang, who is a volunteer with the House of Friendship, says she volunteers to give her purpose.
I retired in 2021 and I needed a purpose. I needed to belong somewhere. I needed to be part of a group. And so I was looking for something where I could volunteer.
Lang has been volunteering for many years with different organizations and says that she is grateful to be able to make positive impact on the community.
You look at the state of the world right now. Okay, globally, chaos. What am I going to do about it? I can't affect that. You look at it nationally, chaos. I can't do anything about that. So the only effect that I can have is locally in my own community. So I can be more effective on a smaller scale to improve my community, which then can improve provincially, which can then and expand that way.
Another volunteer, Richard Hack, who volunteers with Habitat for Humanity, says that he enjoys volunteering because it gives him something to do during his retirement.
I can't sit at home and look out the window, and I don't collect stamps, I don't collect coins, I don't watch TV, I don't go to the coffee clutch at Tim Hortons, you know, it's... Yeah, I just need something to do.
Hack says something to remember when looking to volunteer is that many positions don't require special skills and anyone can do them.
I think the thing to remember is that it doesn't require any special skill. You know, it's stuff that anybody can do it. Even I do it. Things that are require skill, like drywall mudding or plumbing or electrical, that's all done by people that are licensed or have the skill. But there's lots of jobs that don't require skills. And so don't be afraid to just come out and see what happens, you know.
All of these individuals volunteer for their own reasons, but make a huge impact on the community, adding something as simple as spending a couple hours a month volunteering to your New Year's resolutions will make a difference in the community. In Kitchener, with the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Cora Cool.
Some volunteers are caregivers. When that name pops up, the image that immediately comes to mind is often one of an older adult taking care of an aging family member. However, this is often not the case. Across Canada, 1.25 million caregivers are aged between 15 and 24 years old. The Eva Marsden Center, a senior support center in Montreal, Quebec, is bringing attention to providing support for those youth caregivers. The center says that they are an under-recognized group, but they're now able to drop in on the current caregiver support circle. Helena Wallace will be phasing into a youth-specific circle and support network where youth can receive guidance and connect with each other. Here's Adam Innes in Montreal, Quebec.
2 years ago, the center started a caregiver support circle, a gathering where those who care for seniors in their personal lives can come and get advice, share stories, and generally support each other. The program has been a success with regular attendance weekly. But Elena Wallace, the center's community outreach lead, noticed another demographic in need of this support.
I'm starting a focus on youth caregivers because that is a huge anomaly. There's so many young people that take care of older family members. And yeah, I just want to give space to them, offer the support that they get from other caregivers and be a source of information.
Across Canada, 1.25 million caregivers are between 15 to 24 years old. Wallace says she has seen here in Montreal West, a lot of youth caregivers are not able to recognize their importance.
A lot of time, too, it's ethno-cultural. It's not looked upon as a task. You know, I'm a caregiver. It's I need to do this for my mom or my dad or my brother or my sister. So it's just innate in them. It's just a part of what they do. So that alone just speaks volumes. Like they don't, they just don't consider themselves as caregivers. But in fact, that's exactly what they are. They don't consider themselves to be caregivers, so there's no discussion, there's no communication, so there's no support.
Wallace says youth caregivers face a number of specific challenges due to their age.
That age group, they're usually going to school or writing exams or a number of things that teens tend to do. But if they're missing classes, a lot of the times they're having a hard time keeping up with the curriculum, or you know, if you're in university, then it's the time management already in caregiving. Time is so precious.
Currently, youth caregivers are now able to drop in on current caregiver support circles at the Eva Marsden Center, but over this month Wallace will be phasing in a youth specific circle. Youth will receive guidance and connect with each other. Wallace says when it comes to caregiving, making a connection and having a chat can go a long way.
I think a huge aspect also of caregiving is having someone to listen to, like actively listening, and someone that can relate to what you're going through.
The center has also begun work on a phone line specific for youth caregivers, and has been reaching out to local businesses to create programs where youth caregivers can enjoy reduced fees on certain fun services like nail appointments. The Eva Marsden Center hopes to launch these parts of the program in March. The full youth caregiver support circle starts later this January. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
It's all about caring for others, isn't it? And that is exactly why the Dimensions Center in Haliburton County, Ontario is so important. Dimensions is a safe place for veterans in need of help to overcome PTSD. Dimensions has so far treated nearly 200 veterans and is planning to expand its programs to include first responders as well. There are some 630,000 veterans in Canada, and statistics reveal that they are prone to higher rates of depression and anxiety. The center is set on 42 acres of serene wilderness on Maple Lake. The facilities include 17 cabins, a lodge for clinical services, a float tank for deep relaxation, and a stunning geodesic dome. Journalist Elizabeth Oakley recently spoke with Scott Atkinson, a veteran whose life was dramatically changed at Dimensions, also with the clinical psychotherapist that works with veterans to improve their quality of life and deal with their PTSD symptoms.
Scott Atkinson knows a lot about trauma and the many unhealthy ways to cope with it. Having served for 25 years in the military in war zones, Scott has seen and experienced unimaginable pain and turned to alcohol and painkillers to keep him numb. After years of a downward spiral, which cost him his 24-year marriage and family, Scott found Dimensions, an interdisciplinary treatment program in Haliburton County, specializing in post-traumatic stress disorder in Canada's military service men and women. The program, soon to be expanded to include police, fire, and EMTs, has already helped nearly 200 veterans like Scott turn their lives around.
Well, alcohol and pills and everything took over my life a lot. In 2018, I ended up in rehab for 6 weeks. And it was the same there. Don't fix anything, just take pills and we'll put it there. I was on 22 pills a day when I came out of rehab. Rehab got me on the way to everything. It got me off the booze, off the pills and everything.
Scott served in Yugoslavia and did two tours in Afghanistan. The daily barrage of brutality fed into his fear and anger, and it took its toll.
Afghanistan was a year long, you know. I was in the operations side of it, and it just feeds on your brain. It's like constant. It's like a giant video game in 24 hours a day. So, you know, it's hard to pinpoint and say what exactly did it was, you know, but it fed to the alcohol, the pills after and everything. And that ultimately that was nobody's fault but my own. But, you know, it's the way I was coping. It was the way I was dealing with the anger, the depression, you know. Every vet kind of works on the same way. You get that anxiety built in you, which leads to fear and anger, and then it leads to depression, because now you're like, well, what did I do? You know, my poor kids. I fight that every day now, the guilt of what my kids went through, and they're in their 20s now.
Eager to live a healthier life, Scott got his diabetes under control, began practicing yoga, and learn more about using therapeutic cannabis and psychedelics for trauma and pain management. His research led him to Dimensions, and soon Scott was benefiting by the PTSD programs there. The program is divided between a 10-day retreat for vets, followed by a year-long follow-up program with Dimensions staff and fellow participants. The goal is to support vets reintegrating with society.
You do the 10-day retreat up there with the veterans, and you learn so much. And if you do the hard work after, it's going to continue. It will continue for as long as you want it to. And I think that's a big part of the key. Like, there's the 10 days up there, which is fabulous up there. Like, you can't deny what it is up there. But a lot of the work happens after, in dealing, not, I shouldn't say dealing, in working with yourself and putting the time in for yourself.
Donald Curry is the clinical director of Dimensions and a registered psychotherapist. He says the veterans program is trauma-based in a secluded natural setting. Using complementary practices such as somatic body-oriented therapy, sound baths, Thai massage, yoga, cold plunges, and even biosound therapy, the Dimensions team works together to address trauma stored in the body.
It is a very tailored approach for each person because each person is a unique individual, right? So the team collaborates together and coming up with, you know, the best treatment care plan that we can for someone. And it really is combining that modern neuroscience with the ancient wisdom, right? Of being in nature to heal, being in community. Like, we've healed in communities for thousands of years, and I think that we've become more disconnected over the past few decades. And so it's returning to that sense of community we see as helping people to heal. Oftentimes when you're working with a population, a clinical population like veterans, there's a higher level of trauma. Right. Oftentimes people that come in for a veteran program have complex PTSD symptoms, depression and anxiety. Everything that we do here is trauma informed. Right. So it's always talking. It's first of all about building a really safe and strong therapeutic relationship with the guests that come through here. It's also, you know, really talking about everything that we're going to do every step of the way and giving people agency and choice within the process as to what feels comfortable for them, what doesn't. And then we're able to make adjustments, right? And find the right cadence and the right rhythm within their therapeutic process that feels safe for them. We have saved people lives, I would say, you know. So it's great to see the progress of people and also like how in such a short time, we're able to turn that around. It's really remarkable.
Meanwhile, back in Smith Falls, Scott is feeling positive about his progress, as well as his emotional and physical well-being. He is now a yoga instructor and a strong advocate for veterans' mental health. Dimensions is already working on programs for first responders and hopes to have them in place soon.
Thanks to Elizabeth Oakley in Haliburton, Ontario.
Hi, this is Erica Butler in Sackville, New Brunswick. You are tuned to Viewpoints.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
From caring to being with others, we turn to sports and to Nova Scotia, where the 16 teams at the Canadian Mixed Doubles Curling Trials treated fans to some impressive curling last week in Liverpool. One young Queens County curler left his own impression on the father-daughter team of Jalen and Jim Cotter from Vernon, B.C. 7-year-old Albie Randall led the Cotters onto the ice during the opening ceremonies last Sunday evening. He was one of the young curlers chosen to escort teams. The Cotters remembered Albie later in the week after their last game and gave him one of their curling brooms as a souvenir. Coincidentally, Albie's family had lived near Vernon before they moved to the Liverpool area. Rick Conrad in Liverpool, Nova Scotia was on location.
The 16 teams at the Canadian Mixed Doubles Curling Trials in Liverpool treated fans to a week of impressive curling. The trials wrapped up on Saturday at Queen's Place AmeriCentre. One young Queens County curler, though, left his own impression on the father-daughter team of Jalen and Jim Cotter from Vernon, B.C. 7-year-old Albie Randall of Brooklyn led the Cotters onto the ice during the opening ceremonies last Sunday evening. He was one of the young curlers chosen to escort teams. The Cotters remembered Albie later in the week after their last game and gave him one of their curling brooms as a souvenir. Albie's father, Darren, explains.
Oh, the moment from the week that stuck with me is one of the Cotters, the team, when they went out of the tournament, my son walked down and they gave him their broom from the game, which is super emotional, which is, I never would have thought that from coming to a curling tournament. And we used to live near Vernon, BC, and it's where they was from also. It was just randomly that he was leading them out, like, and it was just great.
As for Albie, he summed up the experience in one word.
Awesome.
That was just one of the special moments from the week of curling in Liverpool as some of the country's top curlers competed for a chance to represent Canada at the 2026 Winter Olympics in Italy. Jocelyn Peterman and Brett Gallant capped their perfect record during the week by winning the final on Saturday over Rachel Homan and Brendan Botcher. After a year and a half of work getting it together, organizers were happy with how the week went. Kim Thorburn Whalen is the vice chair of the Liverpool Championship Host Society, which has hosted 4 major curling events in Liverpool. She said it's their biggest and most successful one yet.
it surpassed our expectations. Like, we had a budget for what we were looking for ticket sales, and we more than doubled it. So for the final weekend, it's been pretty well sold out, and this draw, the final draw today, has been sold out completely. So we're pretty ecstatic about that. It's been over 1,000 seats sold just for the final draw today.
Some longtime curling fans, like Rose Anthony of Milton, took in every moment.
It was fantastic. I had the whole package, and I never missed a draw.
The curling trials also created some new fans in Liverpool, like Albie's dad, Darren.
Learned so much. I never knew all the, like me, and still learning the rules, but great, so skillful, and I'm into it, and I'm like a soccer football guy myself, right? And I love this, so yeah, it's perfect.
Winners Peterman and Gallant will next compete at the World Mixed Doubles Curling Championships in Fredericton in April. I'm Rick Conrad.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints.
And we close our show in British Columbia, where the Comox First Nation made history in early December when they appointed Dr. Marion Bowler as their Justice of the Peace. This is a first in Canadian First Nations history. Dr. Marion Bowler has nearly 40 years of legal expertise. She was the first Indigenous woman to be appointed provincial court judge in BC in 1994. Chief Robert Louis is from the West Bank First Nation and chairman of the First Nation Lands Advisory Board. This is an organization that works across Canada, supporting First Nations communities in re-establishing control over their lands, natural resources, and the environment. Chief Louis spoke with journalist Heather Watson in Nanaimo, British Columbia, about what this could mean for the future of Comox and other First Nations across the country.
On December 4th, 2024, Comox First Nation appointed Dr. Marion Bowler as their Justice of the Peace, a first in First Nations history in Canada. This historic moment is the next step in a long journey for the Comox First Nation towards self-determination, building on previous steps like signing to the Framework Agreement in 2014 and voting to approve their land code in 2016. Chief Robert Louis of West Bank First Nation is chairman of the First Nations Land Advisory Board. The Land Advisory Board is an organization that works across Canada to support First Nations communities in their efforts to re-establish control over their lands, natural resources, and environment. One way is through land codes, a level of self-governance achieved by the Comox First Nation in 2016. Chief Louis spoke to CHLY about what it means to be a land code First Nation, how that led to this landmark moment, and what this means for the future of Comox First Nation, as well as other communities across the country.
Yes, a land code First Nation is a government decision maker. It has the community who passes a land code, enters the realm of self-government. The parts of the Indian Act disappear and is replaced by the jurisdiction of the First Nation. So at least one third of the Indian Act is no longer applicable to a First Nation with a land code.
Louis explains that this means the community, in this case Comox First Nation, governs what happens on their lands with full lawmaking capacity.
Anything that affects lands, the community has that full decision-making capacity.
Comox First Nation is one of over 120 communities across Canada to pass land code with the help of the Lands Advisory Board, Louis says.
This is what is happening across the country, and I know our team. We have a Lands Board, Board of Directors that are reflective of communities right across Canada. We've got Resource Center staff who, you know, work from Vancouver Island right through to Newfoundland. And it's a really a good working feeling that, yes, we must work together. Don't leave anybody behind.
While Comox First Nation are one of many to pass land code, they are the first to appoint a Justice of the Peace. Louis shares what it is that qualified Dr. Marion Bowler to be the first.
And Dr. Bowler is a First Nation member of the Mistawasis Cree First Nation in Saskatchewan, and has achieved much in her career over 22 years as a provincial judge.
The Honorable Judge Marion Bowler has nearly 40 years of legal expertise and was the first Indigenous woman to be appointed provincial court judge in BC in 1994. Judge Bowler was instrumental in establishing the First Nations Court of British Columbia in 2006 and became Chief Commissioner of the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls in 2016. She was appointed Chancellor of the University of Victoria in 2022.
There's no doubt that they've made a perfect choice for their Justice of the Peace.
The movement to self-governance evolved from the framework agreement to the passing of land codes at the turn of the millennium. Since then, the number has grown to over 120 communities across Canada with this self-government land management function, including Comox First Nation. But the gap in enforcement persists, as Chief Louis explains.
So the difference here is that while you have the general public having more clarity on how enforcement takes place, how prosecution takes place, with First Nations, it's a growing understanding with various levels of government to enforce those laws. So consequently, Comox has had to challenge the laws and ensure their laws are enforced.
Louis shares how that very thing happened with a landmark case in 2018.
And so they were very successful here in 2018 with a landmark case, court case on trespass, a landlord-tenant situation where their laws, once passed, had to be enforced by the courts and by the RCMP.
Louis says this gap in the system is what led the Comox First Nation to their decision to appoint a Justice of the Peace, the first ever in Canadian First Nations history.
They have expertise now. So now, for them, it means that they have a justice of the peace who can now deal with offenses and implement things like restorative justice. Here you have the potential of adding more of a traditional flavor to it, having elders circles in place, having sentencing that may be more unique to a community to reflect its own cultures and how they do things. Throughout Canada and BC, not excluded from that, there is a disproportionate number of incarceration of Indigenous peoples. And so it's helping to deal with things like that and blending in of the First Nation cultures in the justice system.
Louis says that as Justice of the Peace, Buller will have her hands full, setting the precedent for how things will be done and managing disputes and challenges to laws with fairness and efficiency, providing everyone their right to proper access to the justice system.
And so now she now provides a framework for that justice system to occur and to better reflect enforcement of Comox laws and values and how they wish to move ahead in managing their lands and resources.
Louis speaks as well to what it means for Comox First Nation and other communities across the country to have this historic first.
And I suppose when you look at being the first in Canada, they've put history in motion.
This is Heather Watson.
Please give a listen to Heather's complete and unedited 9-minute story on frequencynews.ca. That is where some 300 stories are produced every month by our team of journalists from all over the country. Well, we try. Questions or comments, radio@frequencynews.ca. And this is how we close our show this week. Thanks to our journalists, Heather Watson, Elizabeth Oakley, Rick Conrad, Adam Innes, Cora Cool, to both our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Conrad Fox, based in Ontario. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassin. Thanks for keeping us company this week, and until the next time.
Nationwide. Indulge yourself in the cultural and folklore traditions of Italy on Il Sole Italiano every Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m.
Eravamo ancora fanciulli e ogni sera su